Good evening and welcome to Town Square. I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich. Our weekly conversations always include you. And if you'd like to join us, the phone lines are open. Our number is 941-3689. That's the number if you're on Oahu, 941-3689. And from the neighbor islands, or if you're somewhere else listening to the live stream, you can get to us at 877-941-3689. The opening speeches are over. The wish lists of state, Senate, and House leadership have been made public, and the 2015 legislature is beginning to get down to business. Next Monday, we'll know what Hawaii's new governor wants from this session when he gives his first State of the State address. Over the next 15 weeks, we'll see how all of these issues play out and what sleeper bills, not yet identified, begin to take our attention. But to start the session, contributing political and policy editor to The Conversation, Neil Milner, and UH professor of political science, Colin Moore, have made their watch lists, and we hope you have yours. And we want to hear from you as we take a first look at the ledge tonight on Town Square. Our phone lines are open again at 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. What issues will you follow in the 2015 legislative session? Give us a call. And to Neil Milner and Colin Moore, welcome back.
Glad to be here.
Thanks. Great to be here.
Seems like we were just wrapping up the last session, and here we are again. So as you heard the opening speeches yesterday, and they're out there, anybody can read them, did you see anything unexpected from leadership in either chamber, or are we kind of looking at a really nice wish list on both sides?
Well, I don't think there was anything particularly unexpected. I mean, this is a relatively modest agenda. You know, both the governor and the majority Democrats have said that. They've even been rather vague on exactly specifically what bills are going to put forward. So this isn't about grand policy visions or a sweeping agenda here. You know, if under Governor Abercrombie we were talking about a new day for Hawaii, maybe we're talking about spring cleaning for Hawaii right now. And so the issues I see here first are going to be issues revolving around the general excise tax, particularly the surcharge for rail. The press has recently reported the $700 million shortfall, which now appears to be close to a $900 million shortfall for rail transit. So that's certainly going to be an issue. I know the neighbor islands would like the ability to raise their general excise tax, so that might be an issue. And the two other things probably relate more to health care. First, the Hawaii Health Connector, which has been criticized certainly by Governor Ige and a lot of the Democrats. They're going to have to work with the federal government about that, but I assume we're going to be talking a bit about that. And then finally, the beleaguered Hawaii Health Systems Corporation, our state hospital system, which has a big revenue shortfall and has been plagued by problems for years.
Not on your list is medical marijuana, which everyone seems to be talking about yet again after all this time of having a medical marijuana law.
Well, the speaker wants to talk about this. I mean, he made that clear in his statement. I'm not sure anyone else in the legislature really sees this as a priority. Certainly, it doesn't appear that the governor does. I would actually be surprised if this becomes a major issue.
All right. That's your list. Neil Milner, you're next.
Well, let me just talk first of all about the one thing that's not on the list. My list of what's the on list is pretty much what Colin said. One of the interesting things, and in some ways quite amazing, that's not on the list at all is universal pre-kindergarten for the children of Hawaii. All you hear so far is something about increasing the opportunity for late-born five-year-olds to go to go to kindergarten, which is small potatoes. You're not hearing anything about a program that the Abercrombie administration pushed for a long time that the legislature was interested in and that, in fact, there was a constitutional amendment about. I think that there is not much commitment to doing this, even though this is a program that has been very effective and done in other places. We can talk later about why it is. Let me say something about the context, about spring cleaning and all of that. I think that you have to understand how much of what goes on in this legislature is what I call the movie Groundhog Day. And it has to do not just with how the legislature behaves, but over time similarly, but also because there are pretty stable forces out there that are very difficult to change. And one of them is the economy. The economy, you have to balance the budget in Hawaii. The economy here is not very good, and it's not going to get much better over time, even though our unemployment rates are low, revenue is there. So you have the economists coming in because they're the shamans by law. They're the shamans. They come in and they testify, and they said it doesn't look all that good. So you're already starting with that same old kind of message. You have a kind of legislative process that discourages deliberation, that discourages taking on big issues. You have a very cautious, you have a liberal, maybe, democratic culture in the legislature, but a very cautious democratic culture. And all of those things, and of course there's no significant minority party. It's not there. So all of those things essentially lead to a set of restrictions that make it be much more like spring cleaning. It's almost always spring cleaning, and it's almost always that the legislature doesn't deal with some significant issues over long periods of time for whatever reasons, part of which is that they don't know how to grasp them. And you mentioned two of them, the health system and the medical marijuana.
I mean, part of this is that so much has to be packed into a very small period of time. There's only so much you can get to. And then invariably, if it's something that has great policy import, it's going to take a while to develop. But when you look at things like the medical marijuana law, I mean, 14 years is a long time to wait. What did they not have 5 years ago or 10 years ago that suddenly may be appearing now?
I can't imagine what that would be. I can't imagine what gives them a greater capability of doing this now than it did before. The health systems one, the community hospitals one's a little different because you have very formidable union opposition to that. That's not going away, and that probably had as much to do with limiting ways to figure out this than anything else. But the medical marijuana is a kind of thing that you have in the state fairly frequently. You adopt some kind of policy, and then that policy simply lies in the weeds without getting implementation. One of the things that Beth Fujimoto said that I think is very significant in her own, now the minority party leader in the House, she said we should focus a bit on making the state programs that are already existing stronger. And one of the situations in this state that comes up all the time is the lack of monitoring, the lack of watching for implementation, the passing of some kind of law, and then not really making it work.
So then what do you make of some of what you heard come out of Senator Don Mercado Kim and some of the things that she wanted to see done? Like, for example, doing away with the Land Use Commission. That seems to be something that would be more of the new and sweeping variety than opposed to
fixing. So, I mean, so what's going to happen with it? I don't think that's...
I mean, my point is this just a bunch of, puff of winds that come out at the very beginning with the speeches? I mean, really, do you really feel in any way that anybody's given a real indication of what the real work of lawmakers will be by hearing some of these speeches?
Sure. I think so. I mean, I think the list we gave, the legislator is going to work very hard on this. They're going to work very hard GMO-related issues right now, the way it's being framed.
Pesticides,
the way it's getting framed now. I think that's the case. And they're going to work very hard to keep one issue from dominating the session. So I'm not at all saying that this stuff is all puffery. What I'm saying is that if you look at the history of the way the legislature operates, you always have to be very skeptical about things moving forward in a significant sort of way.
If you're just joining us tonight, you're just listening to Neil Milner. Colin Moore is here, too, and you, taking a look at what you think is going to capture your attention as we move through the session that just started yesterday. So what are you watching? Obviously, you hear the news, you pay attention to things that mean something to you. What does that look like? 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. What's your pet issue this time around? You have a couple of them. We want to hear from you. Okay, what about the whole issue of public infrastructure? We've been talking about that one for a very, very long time, and that was one of the top listed priorities for the House.
Yeah, well, I mean, this is why the neighbor islands want to be able to increase their general excise tax. I mean, I think this actually is something we may see some movement on. I think this is a priority of the governor's. I think it's a priority of the majority party. I mean, it's the kind of thing that fits well, I mean, given what Neil's been saying, which I completely agree with, it's the kind of thing that fits well with what the legislature wants to do. I mean, fixing infrastructure is a great thing to bring back to their constituents and say, you know, we've been working on this very tangible thing that you can see. And so I think there's going to be movement on that. I wouldn't be surprised if the neighbor islands were able to get permission to raise their general excise tax a bit. Donna Mercado Kim seems to be agreeable to that idea. So I think we're going to see something like that. But these bigger issues, I mean, to go back to what Neil was saying, like Donna Mercado Kim's idea about eliminating the state land use commission, even her idea about phasing in all mail-in voting like Oregon and Washington, I just don't see where you're going to get a lot of traction to push something like that through. I mean, we have a governor who comes straight from the legislature. We have a one-party state. We have a lot of incumbents. Remember, almost nobody loses their seat in our local elections. And so I don't know why we would expect anything that radical to occur. It's working for the people who sit in the legislature right now, what they're doing.
Yeah, the jury is still out a bit on mail-in also in terms of whether it increases.
That's right.
And so that actually isn't a bad issue to wait for and to actually look at the evidence, which is something that all legislators don't always consider doing. I think another infrastructure area that was at least rhetorically very important in the Abercrombie administration, and they tried to move forward on it, was the computer infrastructure. I mean, essentially we were pretty close to being counting on our fingers and our toes as far as the computer thing.
Yes, and you say WAN computers, yeah.
Yeah, well, that's right. Well, I was going to say that, but I don't think anybody out there under
the
age
of— what one is anymore.
Yeah, that's right.
You took a look one if you happen to be down.
Yeah, I think I had a WAN computer for a very short period of time. But then I got something more modern like a K-Pro. But I don't really know, frankly. That's a fairly low visible thing. The guy who had the job, the kind of chief infrastructure innovation officer, was a pretty high profile guy. But you don't hear much about how that's worked out.
Well, I mean, there have been some victories in some things. I mean, we can give Abercrombie credit for. I mean, you look at Hawaii.gov, for example.
Yes.
I mean,
yes.
The transparency of state level and county level information was just improved tremendously. Mm-hmm. I think we went from being one of the worst states in the nation to one of the best in that regard. But I mean, like Neil says, that's kind of a low visibility thing. I mean, I don't think a lot of people, you know, except for people like me, spend a lot of time looking through the data on Hawaii.gov.
Yeah.
But for consumers who are trying to get at information or trying to get permits or trying to get something from their government and find themselves going from A to B and finding out that these things are actually being carted around in little sacks and written on paper, that's pretty daunting. And the question is, what point are you going to say, we got to do it now because every time we wait, it gets more expensive?
So let's talk about that just for a second to show how this process sometimes works, where you can have the best infrastructure available, but that it's often an organizational problem. By law, the Department of Health, by a certain date, which is now passed, was supposed to furnish a list and some evaluation of home health care. They aren't anywhere close. They went right by it. One of them claimed they didn't even know that the deadline was there. I think, was that Civil Beat?
We did a reality check about that.
The reality check. And this is endemic. This is a problem in all government things. And some of it has to do with having limited resources to carry out the thing. But this is another example where you can have a really good website. You can have really good data processing skills. But if you don't have somebody to input the information.
Well, if you don't migrate the data from how you've collected it in the first place to a way that people can access it.
They collected it in the first place. We don't even know.
And that's the other part, too. That's the first part. Okay, so if that may be an iffy situation. While you're talking about building infrastructure and the rest of that, you got to look at what's happening with prisons because we've been having that conversation for a long time too.
Well, prisons. Here's the thing about prisons. There's two very strong in prison construction, two very strong and conflicting forces out there. This is generally. One is that a prison in certain places brings in lots of jobs. So people want them. Places in upstate New York that were losing employees, the factories are moving out. It's that. On the other hand, people don't want them in their neighborhood. And which force wins out is something here, and that's going to be an issue here. So for years, we're sending our prisoners, lots of our prisoners, to the mainland, and there's been talk for a long time about bringing them back, and I think they're supposed to be reducing the number there. And now it turns out we have a prison, OCCC, that sits on very choice development land right near rail for transit-oriented development.
And where people have to go right by as they come into town.
Which is pretty easy to escape
from. Yes, it was. In fact, for long periods of time.
Which is a problem in a prison.
Right. People would escape and get on the bus because bus service on Dillingham is very good.
So now they can take the rail.
Well, good. Ridership will go up. We'll give a prison escape pass. But I think so they're now talking about that. But that's a very complex kind of issue. My guess is they're not going to make very much progress about it in this kind of session. But that's a large capital improvement. You would open up the land. It raises issues about how many people are incarcerated that shouldn't be incarcerated. All things we've been talking about all coming together here.
All right. If you're just joining us now, we're talking about what we all may be seeing come through the legislature. What issues are taking your attention and what aren't? What do you think ought to just be off the table for right now or that you wish would be? 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Legislature opened yesterday. Maybe it's just kind of catching you by surprise a little bit because we blinked a moment ago. It was Christmas, wasn't it? And here we are, and it's the 22nd of January. But, yeah, here we are, and we are faced with a legislative session and a lot of these issues that are going to affect you. What are you paying attention to? 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Colin Moore is here. Neil Milner is here. And you, too. Okay, one of the things that neither one of you has mentioned yet is the issue of modernizing the grid and all the conversation that we've had about solar and what's going to happen with HECO and what should happen and how do you somehow protect the public interest in all of this and also keep viability for a company perhaps or just viability of a whole new system that we've yet to really see flesh out appropriately.
Well, I mean, so it's next gen, right? This is the
next era.
Yes, next era.
And the PUC that's changing.
Yes, I mean, the PUC that's changing.
Yes, yeah.
I mean, Ige was actually asked about this in a Star Advertiser interview, and the most he was willing to say was, "We still want to focus on getting away from fossil fuels." I mean, it's not like anyone has really tried to torpedo this deal, so it may be that they're all kind of waiting to see where the chips fall. I mean, that would be my assessment.
Well, it has something to do also with who gets to chair the PUC, right? And that's one of the things that the legislature is watching for. I think that the company talks about its interest in keeping solar going, but it's not all that clear it's interested in keeping solar going the way it's been going here, where a lot of people get individual things and get rewarded for it. I think this is a really important area, but I think it's as much on the PUC as anything else. The jury seems to be still out on it, but I find it very unlikely that they're going to not approve of this. What it is whether they can come up with some kind of stipulations that and safeguards. HECO's had a lot of trouble with solar recently because the people who are trying to get it, rooftop solar, have complained that HECO's moving too slow on it.
And the whole moratorium.
Yes, the whole moratorium. Yeah, right.
But there were other things that were in play. We talked to Leslie Cole Brooks from the Hawaii Solar Foundation, Association, and she was making the point that there are some other things in play and we weren't going to beat HECO on the head unduly, but still, what are people going to do and how is this going to be well integrated as we keep hearing those same words, we've got to get off of fossil fuel. What do we really have to do that? We are going to keep talking about everything we have to do.
Well, and our other alternative is going to come up. Is wind power going to come up again? That's never been all that simple here. There are some places that haven't. What is Ige going to do about other forms of non-fossil fuel?
All right. We have yet to hear from you all listening to this. Is this just kind of going right past you? Do you care what's going on at the legislature?
There's a vote of confidence for us.
Really? I mean, because one of the things people were talking about yesterday is, well, how are you going to get people to come out and vote? And talk about the all mail-in vote idea. or how do we get engagement? These are all old questions that we've been talking about for a very, very long time. And usually this gang is pretty engaged. And maybe it's, I don't know what it is. You tell me, 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. I mean, we heard the governor say, the budget's going to be tight, don't ask, you know, and yet we know all of these organizations and agencies have to come to ask. There will be appropriations made. And then we'll find out kind of what kind of session we have by the end of it when we see what gets funded.
Yeah, I mean, they're relying on this surplus or carryover from the previous administration to fund some of these, you know, some of the modest budget increases. You know, the one thing we haven't talked about, which really is the governor's one big idea, is making tax collection more efficient. I mean, this is something he comes back to again and again and again. And given he's a very technical guy, I mean, I don't think it's just pure rhetoric, but this often is his answer to how are we going to fund programs? How are we really going to improve state government? And it's always about collecting apparently these millions of dollars which go uncollected, which may be true, and then really enforcing more the transient accommodation tax, which the claim too is that we're not collecting the kind of money we should because of there are people who just aren't through B&Bs or Airbnb or the rise of these other programs aren't paying their fair share of the transient accommodation tax. And so maybe he's right. Maybe we can increase enforcement. But again, this is not really one of these sexy issues that's going to charge people up. I mean, tax enforcement, kind of boring.
Yeah, but if your you know, tax situation changes by the end of the year when we have that 9, 10, 11%, you know, state tax,
that's true.
That may affect you a lot. But let's find out whether Larry, calling us from the Big Island, has a sexy issue he wants to talk about. Aloha, Larry. Welcome to Town Square.
Aloha. I'm afraid it's not sexy at all. I'm falling on the side of I would like there to be no revolutionary changes in this session. For instance, eliminating the Land Use Commission is too extreme. I would like to see how the new governor deals with the legislature before we start making any extreme changes.
All right, fair enough. Thanks very much for the call.
Sleep well tonight, Larry. I don't think there's going to be any revolutionary changes. And I think that the relationship between the governor and the legislature is important, but it's also easy to exaggerate it. I mean, you have the similar kinds of tensions. The legislature has its own agenda. The legislature has its own institutional rules. The governor, Neil Abercrombie, did not get along with the legislature all that well, but that's just a small part of what his difficulties were. So I think you're right. I think we may be in for some surprises about how Ige works with the legislature, but I don't think that's a huge difference maker.
I mean, considering the fact that, you know, he's come out of the legislature and people say, oh, well, you know, he's come from them. He knows them well, all of that stuff. Are we making too much of that? Because clearly somebody has to change their stance and position when he becomes a governor.
We may be making too much about the relationships between the governor of the legislature. What we're not making too much of is, I think, the politician's interpretation of the election results, which is that we don't want drama. We don't want big fights between the governor and the legislature. I think a lot of voters are just like Larry on the Big Island. They don't want a radical change.
Yeah,
I mean,
simmer down now, everybody.
Yes, simmer down. They're tired. They don't want a new day for Hawaii. They want spring cleaning for Hawaii like we've been talking about. I mean, I think that was if you could get a message, and it's always hard to interpret, you know, what's the mandate of the voters. I mean, that can be a bit silly. But it does seem clear that they like David Ige. David Ige promised efficiency, and that's about it. Abercrombie promised something very different, and the voters rejected that in a historic defeat for Abercrombie. So if you're a member of the legislature, you know, and you're trying to figure out the will of the voters, that is, make some modest changes, don't do anything too radical. I mean, we are sort of a conservative state in that way. We like consensus.
If you share the norms of the legislature, which is what we assume that David Ige does, because he was a good legislator and he was well-liked, the upside is that you share them. The downside is that you share them. That is, that may take away some of the creative tension that is supposed to exist. Every governor, good governors, bad governors, Republican governors, Democratic governors, has had a kind of creative tension, which is built into the Constitution. And it's there because there's supposed to be different kind of perspectives. And it's a way that you process and have negotiations about things. So there is that other side to be concerned with, that essentially you don't have someone who's looking out for the state in a way that's all that different from what he did when he was elected. I'm not saying that's what he's going to do. I'm saying that that's always a possibility if you come from that background.
All right, we're going to go off to some of our callers. If you'd like to join us, our number is 941-3689 or 877-941-3689 if you call us from the neighbor islands or if you're listening to the live stream someplace else. Richard calling us from Honolulu. Aloha, Richard. Welcome to Town Square.
Yes, hello, everyone. Yeah, I want to comment and also ask the panelists about, I just saw something on the news last night about the human trafficking bill and how that pertains to prostitution. My understanding is we have a pretty thriving prostitution industry here on Oahu, and this would help deal with that somewhat. Yeah, what are your folks' thoughts on that?
Well,
I mean, we sort of had so much around that last time.
Yeah.
Is this now a chance to go back and refine it, revisit it?
Nobody's talked much about it. I don't know. I actually, this is the first time that I've heard it in mentioning this. That doesn't mean it's not an issue. I just simply don't know because it hasn't been reported how the existing bill, the existing changes has worked. And that would be an interesting question. And my guess is that that's a question that it's very hard to answer. It's a very complex kind of question. But the state, to its credit, has been interested in it. It has listened to people who have taken the kind of idea of hookers and johns and understood what's really going on here, especially in this place, that it's a human trafficking issue as well as that's includes prostitution but is also broader than prostitution.
Yeah,
but you don't
session,
hear
there
much.
Were some, yeah, but last session there were some wins in that way.
Yes, there were. And it could be that people are satisfied with that now. Yeah, but I just don't know. I haven't heard anything.
All right, Richard, thanks for poking at that. That was good. 941-3689 or 877-941-3689 if you'd like to join us. Going now to Jeff calling us from Kaneohe. Aloha, Jeff. Welcome to Town Square.
Hi, welcome. I just wanted to know how you think the legislature is going to deal with the cost overruns on rail and what we're going to do as a state to get this thing going.
When you say get this thing going, what do you mean?
Is it going to get it finished on time, or is it going to be like the H3 and be 10 years late and millions of dollars in cost overrun?
Okay, what would you bet?
Well, I would have been happier if they had never built it in the first place, but now that they are, I think when the legislators need to find some sort of solution so we don't have to keep paying more and more in taxes.
Here's a calculated guess answer to some of these. First of all, it will not get done on time because none of these ever get done on time because even the most competently designed and implemented projects run into unanticipated events. You can't always predict the future.
And that's kind of normal.
Oh, no, no. I think that's normal. I think that that's just what you build. And the politicians don't always want to talk about it when they're selling the program, but that would be all right. This bigger issue of financing, what's interesting to me is that here's where it stands. There's hundreds of millions of dollars shortfall, as it appears, for rail right now. The city and county want to raise it. Honolulu want to raise the money by getting the legislature to renew that little part of the excise tax to go there. And the legislature says, we're going to hold the city and county's feet to the fire. I'm not sure what that's going to mean. Here's what I think. It is impossible to imagine this project failing. This project has a life of its own. Now, you can say that's cynical. You can say whatever else. This is a huge public works project. People have a great stake in making it work. It's already a lot of money sunk into there. So I don't think there's really an option in the legislature to say, you got to stop it. And I just don't know at this time. Maybe, Colin, you have a better idea. What is it that the legislature can demand in exchange for funding this money? And if this is such a crucial source of revenue, can the legislature really not give it?
Are there really bargaining chips?
I don't think there are. I agree with Neil. I mean, this is the thing about these huge infrastructure projects. I mean, this is on the scale of the Big Dig in Boston, which went on forever and had billions of dollars in cost overruns. I mean, we have this big thing that's being built, right? It has to be finished or it's a worthless project. And so Are they not going to extend this 0.5% surcharge until 2022? No, I think they have to. But to criticize rail transit, I mean, the folks in charge of that, I do think this recent story coming out that says it's not only $700 million, it's $900 million, which they seem to not be willing to report because they assumed that this money, which was earmarked for the buses, which the mayor says, Mayor Caldwell says he wants to keep for the buses, they counted that to get down to $700 million. So there's a real problem with communication from rail transit, and that's something we can criticize them, and that's something that could be improved because they're looking incompetent, even if these cost overruns are understandable.
Well, and that starts seeing people start getting cynical about it and see that little mistake less as communication and more as slick Willy.
Yeah, or corruption.
A kind of slick accounting process going on. If you say you're not going to use the money for something, that it's never going to be in that category, and then it
and
shows up in that category.
Over and over
right,
again.
And then the mayor says it yesterday. The explanation that Grabowskis gave for it was not all that convincing. It doesn't pass the smell test. True or not, it doesn't pass the smell test.
All right. Thanks very much for your call, Jeff. And if you would like to join us, you can. The phone lines are open, 941-3689. Same number we've always had. And if you call us from the neighbor islands or someplace else, you can get to us at 877-941-3689. Going to Tim, calling us from Molokai. Aloha, Tim. Welcome to Town Square.
Yeah, hi. How about a couple of simpler things to lower the cost of living in our wonderful state? How about repealing the Jones Act? And how about doing something about all the uninsured motorists? That would really help out.
Jones Act is federal. We can't really do anything about that. And that's in Congress right now, and our legislators are fighting to keep it.
That's right. I mean, they're unanimous in fighting to keep the Jones Act. So I don't think we're going to see any movement on that.
The uninsured motorists, I imagine that's as much a problem of enforcement as it is in terms of the law, that you would need more monitoring and you would need – it's hard to know when people –
it's not that hard. All you'd have to do is get the insurance companies to provide the state with the license.
I guess that's true. Yeah,
of all the uninsured motorists, and then require the city to provide the state with the current database of the registered vehicles.
You raise a good point, I wonder if other states do that. I have to find out.
All right, Tim, you've raised a question that we're going to go take another look at. Anything else that's on your list? Anything else that's on your list? Even of some of the things that we began to talk about or some of the things that have been held over from last session?
No, I'll just keep it at that for now.
All right.
I've heard about the uninsured motorist thing for a while, so I thought I'd give that.
Thanks. Well, I'm glad you called.
Yeah.
Thanks very much. Go ahead, Neil.
Here's my solution, not the solution, the partial solution to the rail project. You run it just from Kapolei to East Kapolei. Traffic, and then you stop it. So it has a one-stop rail system. Traffic is pretty heavy in Kapolei, and that would save people a lot of time. And then you'd save all that money by not building the other, 22 miles of rail. Yeah, so it would be like a mini monorail. Put it in the hopper, and let's see if it gets anywhere.
And that, my friends, is comedy. 941-3689 or 877.
I flattered you. Think so.
941-3689. We want to hear what you have to say. We're taking a look at the ledge, having a little bit of humor interjected into this, too, because heaven knows we need it. 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Of all the issues that you hear about day in, day out, you watch the news, you get snippets of this and snippets of that, is there really something that means a lot to you, even if it's something that we haven't talked about? Tim called back asking us about uninsured motorists. There must be something in there that you'd like your lawmakers to focus on, and are you letting them know that? 941-3689 is our number, or 877-941-3689. Okay, one of the big issues from last year, certainly with the counties, was the whole issue of GMOs and pesticides and being able to create buffer zones and certainly being able to know what's being released and when. Josh Green says he's got a bill, not thoroughly finished yet, but that's going to be coming out very, very soon, and he wants to see buffer zones around schools and to be able to have some notice about what's being injected into soil and what's being put out around these schools and everywhere. How do we go and continue to have that conversation, seeing what happened last time, now that this has been punted right back to the state where, You know, we were told after those county bills passed that that's where it should be.
Well, the one way to keep that conversation going is to have the conversation about buffer zones separate from the conversations about GMO. And I think that's why this bill has a little bit of a shot to it. This is not the broader issue.
Because they're talking about pesticides.
They're talking about pesticides. They're talking about buffer zones and so on. And that's the what's interesting to me is how little has been said about the legislature's willingness to take on the GMO issue at the state level rather than the county level. And I think the issue in the past has been two things, one, the reluctance, one of which is a political reluctance. It's a terribly divisive issue, and the areas feel very differently about it. The second thing is that the courts have there are some really important constitutional questions about federalism that make it not clear how far a state can go in regulating some of these things involving interstate commerce. I've heard some sentiment this time that, they want to take it on and try to make it a general issue rather than a specific issue. But I think that's a very hard thing to do. There's some community work going on in Kauai that's trying to deal with some of these issues again. But I don't know. I don't know what the legislature can do this time, be more willing to do this time, and the resources it would have that it didn't have last time when it decided not to do something.
Well, and if a buffer zone bill does get passed, I mean, for GMO activists, this could actually be a bit unfortunate for them. I mean, it might sort of take the wind out of the sails of this movement. I think there's a lot of people who generally support more restrictions on GMO, largely because they want a buffer zone, because they're afraid of the pesticides. And if that passes, then you may not have such a robust coalition in favor of this like we saw in Maui.
Yeah, it's one of those situations where the broader you build a consensus, the more likely you are to pass something.
Yeah, well, undercut.
I mean, it becomes something that more people want, and folks who are more passionate about a broader issue that's related might run into trouble.
All right, we're going to take a few more callers. Going now to Matt calling us from Manoa. Aloha, Matt. Thank you for your patience.
Oh, yeah, I was just wondering about the legalization of marijuana. I'm not a smoker or a user, but I figure why not charge a high tax on that, and we could use that for a better good of the rest of the people that live on our islands.
There's no evidence that it's going to happen here in the near future. They're not even talking about it.
Yeah.
This is one of the
They're
examples.
They're just trying to get rid of this dispensary.
Well, we'll get to that. This is an example of what I meant before when I said that this state is a democratic state, but it's a cautious state. And one of the ways that you measure liberalism now, so you and I talked about this, Colin, if you look at states that get called liberal, one of the criteria is do they have marijuana allowing for the sales and use of marijuana. Hawaii has not even moved very much in that direction. They did a long time ago. They passed this medical marijuana thing. That's, what, 13 years ago. It's never been implemented. There still is no way. There are no dispensaries. You're entitled to it, but you can't get it legally. So there's some claim, well, you talked about it at the beginning, that there's some claim that they're going to try to finally work out the dispensary system. I don't know.
Yeah. I don't see any movement on this issue at all. I mean, look, all three of the Democratic gubernatorial candidates were asked about this. All three of them said no. Perhaps if we had an initiative system, we might see more traction on it, but we don't. And so it's pretty unlikely to me that anyone, any local legislator, because I think they are part of our somewhat more conservative, socially conservative at times, Democratic Party here. There's no reason for them to risk that.
You raised an interesting point, which is that I think every state that has legalized marijuana has done it by referendum, not through a legislature. And I think that's an extraordinarily easier way to do it than to have a legislature.
Sure, because no one politician wants to be framed as the pro-marijuana member of the House.
But your point, and you've said this a couple times, that we tend to be socially conservative. And Neil, you said this at the beginning, too, that we may fancy ourselves to be this great liberal state, but really, when you look at how we do what we do, maybe not so. Maybe we take the very slow road.
I say cautious rather than conservative. Yeah. Colin, you may actually mean conservative, because I don't think, if you look at issues that get measured as conservatism, gay marriage and so on, they're not so much. But we're very cautious in moving forward on things. We're not... I mean, arguably, the last time we were really cutting edge was in the early 70s when we passed the pioneering health law, which is an amazing accomplishment. Other than that, we're not really known for cutting edge opportunities.
All right. We've got a whole bunch of callers.
Right.
Everybody wants to get in on this conversation now. We're going to go to Robert calling us from Kona. Aloha, Robert. Welcome to Town Square. Robert,
Hello.
You there? Hi there.
Yes. My question, I'm posing the question, are we still in a recession, you know, on a federal level, because it's going to affect local level thinking? And I didn't hear the president say we're out of it. So we're down here struggling and trying to, you know, make ends meet. But if the government is not going to handle things on a local level, where do we go from here? I mean, we're trying to make it work. But I just see the government being more and more themselves. Are we in a recession?
All right. Thanks very much, Robert, for the call, and thanks for waiting for that. Well, you know, here in Hawaii, there are a lot of people you talk to, and they say it doesn't feel like we're out of the recession. Then you hear the president acting and saying, hey, people, this is good news.
Right. So this, I mean, this is a larger national issue, but it affects us here as well. So the answer to Robert's question is no, we're not in a recession, technically. The economy is growing. But what we see here are the results of the increasing inequality in the U.S. Yes, the economy is growing, but middle-class people have not seen their wages increase in the last 30 years. And you see that in part here, although I think it's buffeted somewhat by the strong union presence. But still, I think this is what a lot of people feel. So they see, you know, the president tells them the economy is getting better. They look at their own paycheck and they don't see that improving much. I think we may not see a ton of movement on that either. I mean, we don't expect tourism to grow by much. I don't think federal spending is going to grow by much. Construction may, but those are the three drivers of our local economy. So I think Robert's question gets at us something a lot of people feel, which is if the economy is getting better, why doesn't my own personal financial situation feel like it's improving?
All right, so feed the whole tax issues into that, or all of the tax issues that we've sort of been talking about, including the idea that those people who are renters should get a tax credit and have that hiked up. It's only $50 per dependent, but how do you change that? That's going to make it substantively different for someone and put some more dollars into their pocket.
Well, every part of the Obama's agenda for making it better for the middle class that he just said at the State of the Union, and it's always interesting. We evidently have no working class anymore. It's always the middle class, and that itself is a political statement. But none of those things is going to be passed. And those things, as far as I'm concerned, would benefit people like Robert. That is, that's a concrete way that you would have a higher minimum wage. You would have more money for child care. You would have some tax breaks. It would move in a small but important direction toward a little bit more equality. That's simply not going to happen there. I think what you really see on Kona and in other places is the isolation and the increasing desperation of people who don't have a college degree. You and I have talked about this, Beth-Ann, and I've done some writing about it. And I think when I listen to his voice, it sounds to me like he feels that he's isolated and cut off. And this is a very common, it shows up in surveys, it shows up in other places, of the way that working class people see themselves vis-a-vis the government right now. And I don't think the economy is okay in Hawaii. It's not terrific, and I think it's going to be worse than we thought. The unemployment rate is
low.
Is pretty good. What we really haven't talked about, by the way, and I just want to toss it out there and we'll come back to it, is what happens if the military, if we lose 20,000 people here because of sequestering, and that is going to have very profound economic effects also. But as far as Robert is concerned, I don't think much is going to happen to make his life better as far as government policies.
All right. Well, as you have thrown out there, and I want to get to some of these callers, but first let's talk about that. What happens if, in fact, because of sequestration, we lose a whole lot of military folk and they pull out and pull up stakes and say,
well, imagine Wahiawa. I mean, if you ever spent any time out there, you would be losing 20,000 troops. That's the estimated number. You would be losing 20,000 troops in a relatively short period of time in an economy that's fairly fragile. And there's a very strong infrastructure of small businesses and others, and not so small businesses that don't totally depend, but depend on that very much. There's no question that that'll have a profound economic impact, and it'll not be it'll be a negative impact. Just how much, I don't know. I think the economists can probably come up with some numbers on that for you. But I think that's going to be looming in this legislature, because as we move forward in this legislature, we're going to hear more about that sequestration.
And they've already said that, you know, one of their priorities is to protect military bases, not necessarily a lot of the how of that, but certainly the spirit of it.
Who, the legislature is going to protect military?
That's right from the House priority list.
do they plan on doing this by arming themselves and guarding the perimeter?
Well, to be fair, they have done a pretty good job on their committee assignments. Brian Schatz is on appropriations.
Oh, that way. Oh, no, that's right. In that sense, you're
Maisie
right.
Maisie is yes. And
no, you're right.
They're all on armed services.
At the national level, we've done very well. That's right.
I mean, we've been lucky in that regard. But, I mean, this does get it to a broader issue, which is always brought up. About diversifying our state economy. And the problem with that is it's not really clear how you would go about doing that. I mean, tourism, the military, and government spending have always been the sources of the big three here. And what else are we going to do? I mean, everyone thinks we should have a more diverse economy.
Yeah, but you're asking the question, what does diversification really look like?
Yeah, what does that look like?
And we've been asking that question for a really long time, too.
It's not like Facebook is going to be moving to Honolulu and we're going to have, I mean, which would be fabulous, but... it's a very, very difficult thing to do. Yeah.
All right. Well, we're going to go to a few more callers because the hour is moving along. Chris from the North Shore. Aloha. Thanks for your patience.
Yeah. First, I'd like to say that my comment is about police accountability. So first, I'd like to say, you know, I'm not trying to say that all police are bad guys. There are a lot of good, honest police officers that are on the force that work hard every day. But on HPR, The Conversation did an episode on February 25th of 2014, and they talked about the serious lack of accountability for the police officers in Honolulu and in Hawaii. And they cited the locations where you can view the documents and look at and see that officers are not being held accountable for crimes here in Hawaii committed against citizens. And I think, you know, with the national conversation going on about police accountability and shootings, I think this is probably a good time to take a look at our own officers' accountability for their conduct in our state.
Well, Chris, thanks very much for listening all this time, because obviously you heard us talk about that, and we've had other conversations about that too, and I think you're referring to a reality check that we did back in February, so thanks very much. And this is certainly part of the overall conversation you had of several lawmakers get involved over the last many months that we've been talking about domestic violence and that part of reporting within HPD.
But the way this is still basically a city and county issue, mm-hmm. and the way the legislature got involved showed how limited it is. I mean, I think the most significant attempt was that group that was interested in domestic violence, where you still had to rely on the bully puppet. But they were fairly successful there. They brought the discussion forward. The recent thing where they came up with a plan to have a co-chief looks like a solution searching for a problem. Mm-hmm. That has got very little to do, and it's because they don't have much influence over this. This is still basically a state issue. You're going to see it being more visible because the newspapers, the media are starting to cover it a little bit more. And and since Chris is sort of media savvy, he might want to look at some of the recent Civil Beat pieces that have been monitoring this. But the basic structure of accountability hasn't changed. The laws that allow the police to keep a lot of this information private when other public institutions can't has not changed. And so you really haven't moved forward on this accountability issue.
All right. Thanks, Chris, very much for the call. Going now to Daniel, calling us from Kauai. Aloha, Daniel. Welcome to Town Square.
Hello. Thank you. So I'd like to bring up a few points about agriculture in general, and I think it has quite a bit of relevance in everything that we're talking about. First off, with the regards to pesticides, I think separating GMO from pesticides is incredibly important because they are two different things. Pesticides already are heavily regulated. It's regulated on a national level by the EPA and on a state level by the Hawaii Department of Agriculture. So putting further constraints on, you know, growers here who are producing for the economy will probably harm agriculture. Now, I don't think there's any farmer that exists that says, oh, yes, I want to drift onto a school or to a hospital. So putting some sort of constraint on something like that might be useful and actually go over pretty well. But to, you know, say outlaw pesticides or heavily regulate the use even more than they already are could be damaging. And when we talk about agriculture and how that could lead into diversifying economy, I think that Hawaii could do a lot more in strengthening the agricultural sector. Right now, because of the climate that Hawaii has, it's poised to really grow in the agricultural sector, primarily because California agriculture is kind of dying. They're running out of water. The soil is, you know, becoming more saline. If we could break the stranglehold of the shipping companies to where we could ship to the mainland affordably, Hawaii could do really well. So the state could implement some programs to help, you know, capable, competent agriculturalists get land and produce. I think that would do quite a bit for the economy as far as diversifying it.
All right, Daniel, thanks very much for that idea, and I want to hear what the panel has to say.
Well, it's interesting that agriculture doesn't come up when the economists don't mention it as another possible pillar, and there certainly has been a lot of diversification in it. I don't know how much of an economic impact it is. It certainly doesn't reach these three pillars that we talked about. But all you have to do is drive up to the North Shore, and you'll see it's an incredible amount of diversification all the way from the seed companies, the big international seed companies growing corn, to a whole series of crops that never used to be grown here before, all the way from different kinds of truck farming to chocolate. They're producing chocolate and growing their own beans out in Waialua. So that you have it. You do have diversification, and you certainly have more local produce available in stores than you ever did. I mean, when I moved here in the 70s, if I had to go into Manoa to buy lettuce or back in the back of Hawaii Kai there in the valley, now that's changed. I just don't know, and there's more exporting that's going on. But I don't know if it will ever reach that kind of pillar, the big sugar, big pineapple, which was really industrial agriculture in an early stage.
That's right. I mean, I think this is one of the issues that people almost universally support. They want to support local agriculture. I mean, I think we see it's kind of an emotional thing here. I mean, this once was a very agricultural state. How big of an impact that'll have on our state economy, that's where I'm not so sure. I mean, I think it's probably going to remain an important but relatively small part of the economy in comparison to these other three big pillars. I mean,
more of a boutique item. Yeah,
and more sustainability.
Sustainable
too,
and more of a boutique item. I mean, if you compare that to California, where, I mean, it grows the vast majority of fruits and vegetables for the entire country, I mean, that is massive. Plantation style agriculture, you know, with hundreds and hundreds of miles of nuts and fruits and lettuce and everything. I mean, we can't match that, and I don't think we have, you know, that'll ever be a major part.
Yeah,
of the
economy. I don't think Daniel was suggesting that we could supplant that, but somehow to take a little bit of their market share. Anyway, the hour is moving along. We're going to go now and talk to Brian, calling us from Sunset Beach. Aloha, Brian. Welcome to Town Square.
Hi, mine is about property taxes. Last year, I got quite a shock when my house was valued the previous year at just under $1 million, and it went over $1 million last year. And
Brian, can I stop you? Brian, can I stop you for a second? Because
sure.
That's a city issue.
Oh, it's a state. Okay.
We're talking about the legislature, but you're on the phone. So, what are you paying attention to that it would have import for the ledge this time around?
Well, I'd like to see them label the GMOs for sure.
All right.
I don't see any good reason not to accept those put forth by the people that profit from them.
All right, Brian. Thanks very much. You can call us back another day when we do talk about city issues. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Going to Rowan, calling us from IAEA. Aloha, Rowan. Welcome to Town Square.
Oh, aloha, yeah. I just was curious as to, can an individual sponsor a bill or... Does sure. that have to be by the legislature itself, or
you can put a bill in the hopper? It has to. Yeah. The legislature is legislators are the gatekeepers, and it's no guarantee that it's going to get even a partial hearing. But you can introduce a bill, and you can find out. There's things online about how you can go about doing it. You can call Common Cause, and they'll help you. You can call KANU, KANU, and they'll help you. Yes, you can definitely do it.
So, Rowan, what's on your list?
Oh well, I was. Because we have a lot of tourism in Hawaii, and my thinking was if we charged people that come to visit, the tourists, $1 every time they come and put it in for the Hawaiians, the Native Hawaiian Fund, then it would be sort of like Alaska where they get, you know, oil money for the residents, but it would be more like kind of offset all the money that the state owes to the Native Hawaiians.
Well, I'm just trying to do the numbers here. How many tourists do we get a year here?
We get over 1 million flights.
We get millions. But the oil money is huge. The Alaskan oil money is really huge. I'm not saying your idea is a bad one. It's okay, but you're not going to raise all that much money.
Wouldn't have to be in the hundreds of millions a year.
They're not if it's a buck. Buck a head. Yeah. No.
Rowan, the good thing is you want to do something.
Well, and an earmarked fund.
That part's
not impossible.
Part.
Yeah, it's right. You just want to put more money into it.
All right, Rowan, thanks so much. We're going to go to Rafael from Eva Beach, and that is going to be our last call. Aloha, Rafael.
Aloha. I was just wondering, what's the likelihood of legalized gambling coming to Hawaii?
Well, you know, every single time we've had that conversation, it's been a conversation, and then it's gone nowhere.
The big-time lobbyists who usually represent the gambling interest aren't even around anymore.
Yeah.
Now, one of them, I think, is pretty sick and sort of out of the picture, but there's nothing. You haven't heard anything at all.
I think the answer is no. We're not going to get that. I think it'll come if the economy gets bad again. It'll come back as a solution. But, you know, this is always brought up. Gambling is our savior. I don't think that's really worked on the mainland. I mean, there are very few places. I mean, this is always sold in cities. I mean, Detroit was used as an example when they were lobbying for it here last time. I think that the losses really outweigh the benefits in a lot of these cases with legalized gambling.
All right, Rafael, there's your answer. Thanks so much for the call. Well, interestingly, we had no women call us today at all. And I don't know whether that there's sort of an alliance with women and education issues. But just generally, I know we were talking a little bit earlier in the show about the universal preschool issue. But as you take that away from the discussion for a second and look at educational issues, anything that you see happening this time around with the ledge, I mean, nothing that we haven't somehow gone around before that just becomes a continuance, but nothing that would be a new way of approaching.
I think it's the same old, same old, where the social welfare programs and the private nonprofits or the private that are involved in it are going to be fighting for the same old small amount of money. They're not going to be any big new programs. We thought there might be an education. There isn't. A lot of the stuff that's going on in education goes on without the legislature having much to say about it, like the implementation of the Common Core. But you're right that to suggest that you don't hear anything like that at all. It just isn't seen as a kind of concrete sort of issue. I think implicitly it's one of those things where people are going to have to just hang on to what they have.
Another issue that never came up tonight was affordable housing.
I mean, that's true. It's always a priority. It didn't come up tonight. It wasn't a huge – I mean, it hasn't been on the central agenda for the legislature this session.
But even with inclusionary zoning and some of the movement to make that happen?
It's mostly been Kaka'ako-centered. And the legislature has, after passing those bills, those procedural bills to try to do a little bit of regulation of Kaka'ako, pretty minor stuff, they've sort of kept their hands off of that. And mostly what you hear, and there have been some real innovative housing issues that has been down there. There's certain other things developing, and the state just made this attempt that's getting a lot of good play to build sort of in Kapalama off School Street to develop some mixed-use housing and some market housing as well as affordable housing. But you're right. You don't hear that. We're not at a – some of this is city and county, and we're really not at a place where public housing is assumed to be the answer to the question. That if you do the numbers, we have such a housing shortage that you wonder if you can do it any other way, but it's not really seriously considered.
Okay, pretty briefly, because we've got about a minute before we have to say goodbye. Is there anything you think that we haven't talked about tonight that you'd like to point attention toward?
I think we've talked about everything that's realistically going to come up this session. Not everything I hope would come up, but everything that's realistically going to come up. And I wish there was more of a focus on affordable housing, because I do think that's the issue that voters care most about.
And we managed to talk about all of those issues in a whole hour. Neil Milner.
Three things involving the University of Hawaii, one of which is the plight of the athletic program, which means is the legislature actually going to throw in money because it seems unlikely that they can have a business plan to do it anywhere else. And secondly, and it's the same problem, only greater, is the cancer center. And the third thing is the University of Hawaii budget. Very important issues about autonomy.
All right. Well, we will come back and have to have another conversation about that with both of you as we move through the session. Thank you so much, Colin Moore. Thank you, as always, to Neil Milner and to you for joining us tonight for Town Square. I will be back with you tomorrow morning for the conversation. Meanwhile, have yourselves a good evening. I'm Beth Ann Koslovich. Aloha.